Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
My name is Uri Kopilov from Sheba Medical Center in Israel. Welcome to our EduCom podcast on the use of vedolizumab in inflammatory bowel diseases. In the next few minutes, we will briefly discuss the mechanism of action of vedolizumab and the efficacy and safety data from both randomized controlled trials and real-world experience data. Finally, we will also touch upon some questions that still require resolution. Vedolizumab is a gut-selective alpha-4-beta-7 integrin receptor antagonist. Its mode of action is presumed to be gut-specific, as this integrin combination is exclusive to the intestinal mucosa. Vedolizumab is approved by FDA and EMA for moderate to severe disease in ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. In some European countries, it is approved as a first-line biologic, while in others, its use is still reserved for patients that failed anti-TNFs. Contrary to other biologics available to us, vedolizumab is not used in other inflammatory conditions because its mode of action is gut-specific. So let's start by reviewing some data from the registration trials with vedolizumab. The trials where vedolizumab was evaluated were named the Gemini studies, Gemini 1 for ulcerative colitis and Gemini 2 and 3 for Crohn's disease. Let's start with the ulcerative colitis study. The Gemini 1 trial included patients with active ulcerative colitis with Mayo scores between 6 and 12 and endoscopic subscore of at least 2. The patients received intravenous vedolizumab, 300 milligrams at week 0 and 2, or placebo. There was also an additional open-label arm. The primary outcome of the induction study was clinical response, and the primary endpoint was achieved by 47% of patients on vedolizumab versus 25.5% in the placebo arm, and that difference was statistically significant. Clinical remission was achieved in 17 versus 5.5% of the patients on placebo, and mucosal healing 40.8% versus 24.8%, and those differences were statistically significant as well. Importantly, the results were significantly better in anti-TNF-naive patients in comparison to those who have already failed anti-TNFs. In the maintenance study, the responding patients were re-randomized to receive vedolizumab 300 milligrams every 4 or 8 weeks or placebo, and the primary outcome was clinical remission at week 52. The outcomes was achieved by 16% of the patients on placebo, and 42% of patients on vedolizumab received every 8 weeks, and that was indeed statistically significant. The rate of adverse events was similar for vedolizumab and placebo. So this was the UC data. Now let's move on to Crohn's disease. Gemini 2 and 3 studies evaluated the use of vedolizumab for Crohn's disease. Gemini 2 included Crohn's disease patients that were non-responsive to conventional therapy and anti-TNFs, while Gemini 3 included only patients that failed or did not tolerate anti-TNFs. The included patients had to have active Crohn's disease with CDAI of 220 to 450 and objective evidence of disease activity either on ileocolonoscopy or on capsule endoscopy, MR enterography, or elevated biomarkers. The study had two primary endpoints in the induction, and they were clinical remission, defined as CDAI score of 150 points or below, and CDAI response that was defined as at least 100-point reduction in the CDAI score by week 6. In Gemini 2, a total of 14.5% of the patients who received vedolizumab and 6.8% of those who received placebo were in clinical remission by week 6, and the difference was statistically significant. However, it was not for the rate of clinical response by week 6. For the maintenance study, with a primary endpoint of clinical remission at week 52, 39% of the patients assigned to vedolizumab every 8 weeks reached the primary endpoint versus 21.6% for placebo, and that was statistically significant. In the Gemini 2 study, vedolizumab treatment was associated with a higher rate of serious adverse events, infections, and serious infections in comparison to placebo. The Gemini 3 study included patients that were anti-TNF experienced, and the primary endpoint was clinical remission at week 6. The primary endpoint was not reached in the study. However, at week 10, a significantly higher proportion of patients on vedolizumab were in clinical remission, and the rate of adverse events was similar between the groups. Importantly, endoscopic outcomes were not included in the Crohn's disease studies with vedolizumab. To overcome this important data gap, two prospective open-label studies to evaluate mucosal healing specifically were launched by Takeda and were recently finalized and published in Gastroenterology Journal. In the Varsity study that was run in Italy, endoscopic remission was reached by 12% at week 26 and 18% at week 52. Endoscopic remission was significantly more frequent in patients who were anti-TNF naive. In an additional study that was called the LOVE-CD study and originated from Netherlands and Belgium, endoscopic remission was achieved by 33% by week 26 and 36% by week 52. Importantly, although in some patients vedolizumab may require a longer time to respond, in a subgroup of patients with both Crohn's disease and UC that were enrolled in the Gemini studies, a significant improvement in patient-reported outcomes can be noticed as early as at week 2 and 4. On the other hand, long-term extension studies of Gemini with follow-up duration now reaching up to 5 years now support the durability of response and remission with vedolizumab in both Crohn's and UC. Now let's go on and review some real-world data regarding the use of vedolizumab. Since the approval of vedolizumab by the regulatory authorities, multiple real-world experience publications describing the outcomes of vedolizumab therapy that originated from Europe, North America, and Israel were published. Those studies demonstrated comparable efficacy to what was described in the RCTs and a very favorable safety profile. Most of those real-world experience studies were not comparative. However, in the large Victory cohort study that included patients from 16 large American IBD centers, the efficacy and safety of vedolizumab was at least similar to that of anti-TNFs, all anti-TNFs grouped together. In addition, in the recent multicenter European cohort of anti-TNF-naive patients, the efficacy of vedolizumab was substantially higher than what was described in the anti-TNF-experienced population in other studies. In this study with bio-naive patients, week 14 response rates reached 82% for Crohn's disease and 77% for ulcerative colitis. In the EVOLVE study that will be presented in the upcoming UEGW, the rate of response and remission in anti-TNF-naive patients was similar between vedolizumab and anti-TNFs. Regarding the effectiveness in perianal disease and in treatment of extraintestinal manifestations, the data are still very, very limited. Although vedolizumab may be effective in a proportion of patients for those indications, it should probably not be our first choice in those clinical scenarios. In addition, regarding postoperative prevention, the efficacy of vedolizumab is currently not established as we don't have sufficient data to support the use of vedolizumab in postoperative scenario. So for now, let's summarize our discussion. The current data demonstrates that vedolizumab is effective for active Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. The efficacy is superior in anti-TNF-naive patients, and this is especially true for Crohn's disease. The safety profile of vedolizumab is favorable with a very low rate of serious adverse events. The effect of vedolizumab may be sustained for several years after initial response. Thank you for listening to this ECHO EduCom podcast.